Rugby World Cup winning Springbok coach Jock Nienaber is the reason Ireland's national team are struggling. Apparently so, guys. And in this episode, you are going to get a front row seat as I reveal to you what the Irish are saying about our beloved ex-coach. I'll tell you why they're wrong, and we'll delve into this ridiculous modern Irish habit of shunning responsibility and accountability. Okay, so where does all this nonsense come from? Ireland's lackluster performances in the Six Nations. Here's a clip from the Irish podcast, Off the Ball. You're going to hear from Andy Dunn and Jerry Thornley.
Greater portion of the current Irish team are spending most of their week-to-week time on learning a brand new defence, which they've never done before. You could argue, you know, that's the reason why the skill sets are dropping. That's why the accuracy is dropping in attack. You could certainly argue that.
Absolutely, because, you could. And it's the question I think everybody's asking. Mm. How destabilising effect has Jack Nienaber's appointment had on Irish rugby by coming into the bulk supplier to the Irish team? With a completely radical overhaul of the defence and a greater emphasis on defence. And it's worked with Leinster to a degree. They're conceding much less points, but all their attacking metrics are down in the last couple of years. But it hasn't had a consequent good effect for Ireland. If anything, I think it's destabilised the Irish defence because it's a different defensive system and they're now conceding more line breaks, missing more tackles, and it's kind of this all-around-from-the-outside-in approach that they're sometimes adopting with Ireland, but it's not working. It's like, if Ireland had lost at the weekend, there would have been much greater emphasis on James Lowe twice coming in off his wing and leaving the space on the edge, which was vacated for Capoulos in the first instance and Leonardo Marin in the second instance, to get past Gary Ringrose and Conor Murray, who were each trying to cover. But they were both despairing covering tackles because James Lowe had employed the Nienaber defence.
OK, so they're not the only ones unhappy here and lodging this accusation in the direction of Coach Jock. Former Ireland captain Brian O'Driscoll pretty much said the same thing. Now, let me also be clear with you here. The reason I'm showing you this stuff and doing this episode is because when it's the other way round, we get called whiny saffers and we are told that we are coming with excuses. But it seems that when they do it, it's facts and valid reasons. Not just Ireland, by the way, the All Blacks too. Now, let me say this as well. I don't actually have anything against Ireland. I like them. And it seems to me that, like the English sports media, we have a similar kind of Irish sports media that tends to peddle this kind of stuff and tries to stir chaos and controversy. And I don't think we should stand for it. I think we should call it out. Just back on my point of liking Ireland, I've always liked them, as a matter of interest. I think one of the reasons, as a boy, the reason that I liked Ireland was because they also had a green jersey. Obviously not the same shade of green as us, but it was almost like, okay, I'm watching the Six Nations. Look, they wear a green jersey kind of like we do. Yeah, I can get behind that. You can see the kind of thinking that a 9-10-year-old boy would have there, right? Now, what I'm talking about, this element, this lack of accountability and responsibility and looking to shift the blame, I just find that really is the ultimate element of annoyance emerging from that part of the world of late. By the way, is this also Jock Nienaber's fault, I wonder? We've been saying for a while now how the Irish are getting away with murder at the breakdown. Obstruction, offside, entering from the side, illegal tackling or falling over, or falling on other players' lower limbs. Apparently that's still okay. But the moment the national team's defence takes a hit, it must be Nienaber's fault, because he is adversely influencing them at Leinster. By the way, I thought this meme I came across on X the other day was hilarious. I suppose the next thing we'll hear out of their mouths is that Nienaber really, truly is a plant. I mean, the image is already there. Okay, I think we're getting carried away a bit here. So let's come back to the original thought. Ireland are struggling, and we need to find out why. At various times in 2024, Ireland were actually ranked number one in the world. You might remember how we were wondering how it is that the Springboks without playing sometimes, lost their world ranking at the top of the standings. Or we lose one match and the next thing you know, Ireland are top of the rankings again, even though we won the Rugby World Cup so recently. Now, regardless of what you think of the world rankings, that remains an impressive feat. Yet, in the 2025 Six Nations, Ireland arm-wrestled their way to victory over England, beat Scotland, Wales and Italy with enough comfort, and were put away easily by eventual champions France. They ultimately finished third. And since we're talking about Ireland here, I suspect there'll be quite a few Irish viewers on this episode, so I think this will be of great interest to you. These are Rugby Academy Ireland's summer camp dates. It's for 15 to 18 year olds. If you want to get involved, you can email Dan. He's a former Springbok, by the way. He lives in Ireland these days, Dan Funsale. It's admin@rugbyacademyireland.ie. You can also call. The number is +353. That's the international dialing code if you're calling from outside of the Republic of Ireland. +353 86 825 3066. It's for male as well as female players. And now let's get back to the topic at hand. Ireland finishing third in the Six Nations. The general consensus was that something was wrong. Some said it was the team naturally aging. Some suggested they had peaked. Some said it was a transitional period with the likes of Peter O'Mahony and Conor Murray calling it a day, not before the competition, but during the competition. That era of player was coming to an end and they had now been replaced. Jameson Gibson-Park, obviously, is their new scrum half. And by the way, I thought he was outstanding in the Six Nations, and I am going to be shocked if he is not the starting scrum half for the British and Irish Lions later this year. Personally, I think it could also have something to do with the players not responding to Simon Easterby as well as they do to Andy Farrell. Now, whatever you think, there's no doubt that something is not quite right. And as any politician will tell you, never let a crisis go to waste. So now they blame Coach Jock. To be clear, Jock Nienaber is one of the world's foremost defensive rugby minds. Everywhere Nienaber has gone, he has made a positive difference. From his days at the Cheetahs, to his time at the Stormers and Munster, and of course his various stints with the Springboks, including his time as head coach. And don't forget, we are talking about a Rugby World Cup winning coach here. Now yes, it is true that the Irish defensive pattern is not the same as Nienaber's blueprint, and Nienaber's system is now the Leinster way. But you want to really tell me an elite professional rugby player cannot adapt? That is quite frankly the very definition of a great rugby player, in my view, or a great sportsman for that matter. The ability to adapt to changing circumstances. That is what makes any player in any sport great. That ability to adapt to their circumstances. It's why someone like the late George Foreman could win the heavyweight title again at the age of 45. In the 1970s, he could fight against Joe Frazier and Muhammad Ali. And then in the 90s, he could go toe-to-toe with Evander Holyfield and Michael Moorer. He was one of the greats, and I'm delighted that I was able to find a way to get Big George onto my YouTube channel, particularly in light of his passing quite recently. He was actually my favorite out of Frazier, Ali, and then Foreman. The big three in the 70s, Big George was my favorite out of those three. Anyway, back to the matter at hand. In rugby, the likes of Caelan Doris and Josh van der Fleer are also among the greats. Just for the record, I mention that because men like Doris and van der Fleer have the ability and skill set to adapt to their environment or whatever it is that a coach or a new coach is asking of them, whether it be at Leinster or Ireland. Now stay with me, because I'm going to get a bit technical here, talking about defensive systems. When we were at school, we were taught how to tackle. wrapping your arms around the runner's waist and all that stuff. Now, at professional level, and quite frankly, these days, even top high school level, there's a lot more to it than just that. Many teams defend in packs. It's a collective effort. South Africa has for years employed the rush defense, on and off, but most of the time, that's what we have gone with. Jock Nienaber's system basically puts in place a scenario where the opposition cannot find a gap. Now look, when you rush, you have to rush together. Because if you don't, you leave massive gaps, and that's when a quality attacking opponent will pounce. Nienaber's system is also one that defends narrowly. It makes me nervous, or what made me nervous, because I've always felt like a pacey winger like Louis Bielbiari should in theory be able to find his way around that umbrella defense. But what that umbrella defense also does is it surrounds the opponent and creates a suffocating effect. If you're into war and the history of battles, think of Shaka and his Zulu Impi attacking methods, the whole idea of surrounding the enemy with the youngsters, the young men with the short stabbing assegais, or they had the longer assegais. They were on the side. It was the bullhorn formation, wasn't it? And then you had the older warriors with the short stabbing assegais in the middle. If you're a fan of war and military tactics, I know you would have got a kick out of that sort of analogy and comparison to the umbrella defense. One way to perhaps describe the current Springbok defensive system is to say that we like to take off from our marks as quickly as possible to close down any space that the opponents may have to play off. Think of the speed of an athletic sprinter when the gun sounds, for example. Now, this also requires tremendous discipline because it's very easy to stray offside. What we try to do is put so much pressure on the attacking player or players that they are forced into errors and or cannot get the ball to its intended destination. Now, not everyone defends the way we do, but I think it's fair to say that most modern defenses try to stack players close to the ball. That makes for small gaps or smaller gaps or even non-existent gaps at times that are difficult to exploit. And in theory, you're defending by attacking the ball rather than the player. The reason you do that is because modern attacks all use decoy or dummy runners. For example, when last did you see a scrum half pass to the fly half, who then passed to the inside center, who in turn offloaded to the outside center, and then tried to put the wing away? No one does that anymore. Teams attack in pods of three or more, and the guy who appears to be in line to receive the next pass almost invariably is just the dummy runner. But as a defender, can you afford to take the chance to take your attention off that player? But that also is why it makes sense to defend space rather than players. The space stays where it is. The players are the ones that are moving, as is the ball. But if, as a defense, you attack the space and or the ball rather than the players, and I accept that the ball is also moving, unlike the space, you call it zonal marking if we lend a term from football, then you're likely to be doing a lot less running around like a headless chicken. There's also a drift defense, which is basically exactly what the name suggests. It's the defenders collectively drifting in the direction of the ball and where the attack is going. Again, the goal is to close down space. And frankly, that is the goal of any defensive system. I think it just comes down to how much space you're willing to allow your opponent to play with before you try to cut them off. In the case of the Springboks, we don't want to give you any space at all. But Ireland do things a little bit differently. And that is what has caused Brian O'Driscoll, Andy Dunn, and Gerry Thornley to complain. According to them, the Irish players are confused and caught in limbo. What do you think? Are they making a fair point full of facts and valid reasons? Or are these just convenient excuses? Let me know in the comment section down below. And guys, just quickly before I say goodbye, I want to tell you about my Patreon page. It's your opportunity to get involved, join the A-team, join the Front Row Rugby squad. You can hop on board and sign up as a patron. The link is in the description area below. Why would I like you to do that? Because I want to do this full time, and I would love to go to the Rugby World Cup in 2027 and cover it for you from down under in Australia with daily content. If you'd like to support me, sign up as a patron, and it starts from as little as $5 per month. That's US, not Zimbabwean. Otherwise, I better start swimming to Australia right about now. I'd appreciate your support. I really would. Thank you in advance, and I look forward to speaking to you next time.